Let me try this again. I think we have a critical mass here. Can you hear me in the back? Good. Welcome on this final day of the conference. For those of you who still don't know me, my name is Michael Murphy. I'm the executive director of ICSC, and this bonus session is to review the 2023-2024 Diocesan and Foundation Survey. It's a long time coming, 16 months cooking for you. So if you came to hear 25 ways to get people back into the pews, you don't want to be here. You'll be in another. Let's start, as we always do when we gather, with prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Together, loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry, and to answer the call to be his disciples. May our response be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities, and may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is the Lord forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. As I said, this is this survey results, this report, is a long time coming. ICSC has had a rich history of offering dioceses and Catholic foundations these reports. I remember when I was your counterpart in the Archdiocese of Detroit, we had CARA from Washington, D.C., crank these out every year. And they were something that I know that my archbishop was very, very interested in seeing what his counterparts around the country were doing. And it also was kind of a bellwether for us. It was the ability to read the signs of the times in that particular area. I remember my first one was in 2008, and wrote one with a collaboration of a number of ICSC members back in 2011. We had help in 2013. Villanova University came in and helped us with one in 2008. And now I think that the progenitor of this particular report comes from Patrick Grace and Jim Kelly here to my right, when they saw that in the post-pandemic era here, we really need to try to help dioceses see the landscape of Catholic philanthropy during a pandemic and beyond. And that's why we think this is going to be helpful. And it was CCS that stepped up to partner with us. CCS has been a tremendous partner of ICSC over the decades, if you will. I mentioned yesterday that they've been with us since 1962, when we first began our operation. So they've been a great support, and they took the data that came from our sweat equity, all of us, and put it together, and will help us see where we are. My intent with this is to, in the month of October here, probably in the next couple of weeks, have this printed up in a hard copy, send it all to our members under a separate letterhead, send it to our bishops with the help of our new Episcopal moderator, Archbishop Fobb of the Archdiocese of Louisville, to the bishops and CFOs, and then to those dioceses that are not members of ICSC and other interested Catholic organizations that we think would benefit from this. So you expect to see this, all of you, within the next 3 to 5 weeks. Right, again, to my right, I don't think they need lengthy introductions. Jim Kelly and Patrick Grace continued to spearhead this over a number of months, and we have this rose between two thorns over there, Sarah Sawaki, with CCS to help guide us through the intricacies of the report. They're going to stop at about 15 minutes till the end and open this up for questions, and I'll run around with the microphone and hand it to those who are interested in asking. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Jim.
Great. We're getting ready to, can you hear on this? Is this good?
Yep.
Great. So obviously we have no hair, hair, and hairs. I mean, so works out good. So anyhow, welcome to the presentation of the Diocesan Report. We had 75 dioceses across the country fill this out. Again, ICSC and CCS had a great partnership. So let me just say to you again that we've had a number of great partnerships over the year. We've been around 62 years. CCS is the only group that's been with us all 62 years. So they've been awesome, did the survey, as Michael said, in 13 and 24. So Patrick and I went to Tom Kassane. He's our go-to person at CCS, and said, Tom, we have this idea. Can you help us with this? And he said yes, which Tom always does. Tom and I have been friends and worked together for 38 years, and so we're grateful for what he's doing, what he has done. Tom couldn't be here, but he said, here's what I want you to say. Tom always has something to say, as you guys know. He said, tell people that CCS remains steadfastly committed to the stewardship movement. He is confident in the ICS's future as the great convener of our shared ministry and looks forward to working with parishes and dioceses and projects going forward. And then he said, CCS will always be available to lend their resources, experience, expertise, and leadership to the community and ICSC. So we're grateful for that, for Tom. What we're going to do is we want to give you a lot of dioceses over these next 45 minutes or so that you can then call for best practice ideas. You'll call different dioceses about different things that they're doing. So this is to highlight those and have you do that. Let's look at, again, the picture. Obviously, you have some good-looking people, good-looking person there. The other two of us, not so much, but we're all grateful. Let's go to the next one, if we could. So as we kick off, we want to start with orientation to sector giving. So we're going to keep this broad initially. Giving to religion still remains the largest sector, 24%. But it's going down. It was 27% in 22. So the concerns was 50% some years ago. So we hope that doesn't continue because it's a little bit of an issue. But the annual growth rate for religious giving averaged about 3.1%. Again, the overall was 5.3. But there's still some hope for optimism. The rate of decline is lessening. Still a decline. And the lay faithful are very generous. According to Giving in Faith, that explored key trends in religious giving, 95% of faith-based donors gave to organizations or individuals, including places of worship. Among those donors, 60% gave $1,000 or more, which is good news. But what we want to do is take a position to try to be beneficiaries of the generosity. So it's interesting that the research that CCS did in 24, the fundraising philanthropy pulse, many faith communities found the two key things going forward is get strong retention and get endowments going. So there were indicators in the CCS study, separate from this one, that strong retention is core and that having endowments in parishes got people core to continue to give. So two key things you want to work on. 64% of faith organizations retained over half of their new donors, compared to 51% across sectors. So we're keeping folks in a better way with that. We'll go to four. So now, I want you guys to start getting more engaged, just to be honest with you. So we had 75 dioceses participate. You notice region 4 and 14 work as one region, and the group of us had a high percentage. I'd like to have the rest of the country get in that range next time. We had 83%, 86%. I'd really like the rest of the country to join us more. So we'd like to go from 75 to 150. So please join us next time. It's important you do that. The next slide we'll look at here, then again, we've clustered our findings into the 0 to 24,000 or 25,000, 25 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 200, and 200 plus. So you may call some of the dioceses in your area. You may not call a 200,000 diocese parish group when you have yours as a 50,000. So we'll do that clusterings. So that's an important part of this. Next one we'll look at. So again, you'll see we had 75 on 176 of the diocese, about 44%. The northwest and southwest had about 40%. Again, the southeast had 76%. Northeast, I don't know where they were, the 6%. So we got to work in the northeast. So it's important we set the stage what we're going toward, but we really want to get more people involved in filling this thing out. If we had 150 filled out, we do a lot better job with this survey, so really want to push hard to get more and more people to do it going forward. Patrick, over to you.
So we're going to start with the baseline for giving in any diocese and certainly in any parish, and that relates to offertory. Just out of a show of hands, how many of you in this audience have responsibility for your diocese, or their parishes are here, but most of your diocese. How many have responsibility for offertory in your own respective diocese? Just a handful. That's very interesting, and perhaps not a surprise. I think that's an important conversation for all of us to know, because we all are very familiar with the fact that offertory is the lifeline for our parishes, and it is the lifeline for our diocese. So all of you know that, whether your catedraticum is X percentage or Y percentage, or you're certainly a parish, it is certainly the main baseline for any operating funds for your own local parish. So I think that's something, if you're not engaged in, if you're a director of development in this room, or responsible, that is something that I think is important that all of us should be engaged with in the work and ministry we do for our diocese. So let's dive into some of the data here. You can see that 57 parishes, or I should say 57 archdioceses, provided data from fiscal year 2020 to 2022. We specifically requested this data over these 3 years to analyze the impact of the pandemic on giving and observe the subsequent recovery. There's good news here, certainly, to share, and there's also some challenging news. We'll get to that in a minute. 51 archdioceses reported that offertory increased during this period, as you can see. One diocese reported no change, and five dioceses actually reported a decrease. Of those that reported increases, nine were up more than 10%. And four were up more than 20% during this time. So just to look at that. The next slide is kind of looking at some long-term average offertories. Again, the trend is positive, but certainly favors smaller dioceses. And that's probably not a surprise to anybody in this room. When you do campaigns, we work with parishes, participation rates, dollars, all of that is higher with smaller parishes. It's not surprising that that correlation also exists in the diocesan landscape as well. So smaller dioceses tend to have stronger rates of participation. You'll see in a few minutes, a few slides, also the average increase as well. So while the average offertory for all groups, or I should say groups 2 and 4, experienced the greatest increase, you'll see, to keep up with inflation and growing expenses, obviously it's vital for all of us to grow this offertory over time. So I'm not going to get into the more detail. We can go to the next slide, Sarah. This just breaks it down by the various groups. And I mentioned group 2 experienced the largest offertory growth at 11%, but all groups did experience some growth at some level. Next slide. This is the top offertory performers by group. You can see them all listed here. I mentioned that the smallest dioceses tend to do better. Certainly kudos and hats off to some of the dioceses that are referenced here. You can see, or now I will reference rather, Wichita. Wichita, by the way, has the largest, highest average gift for, I think, those of you know that Wichita is a stewardship diocese, go figure. So it may not be a surprise that their average gift is over 2,400 dioceses. Larger dioceses, again, you can see there, numbers for like Detroit or Dallas, their lower per household giving is probably indicated. You can see that up there. I mentioned that a little bit. Next slide, Sarah. This just kind of gets into some of the top performers in each of the areas. I won't get into this too much. You can see the own statistics there. But I think the main takeaway here is the importance of us as directors of development in our own respective dioceses. What are we doing to help our parishes at the offertory level? I think there's a lot of opportunity for us in the advancement and development world at our diocese to help our parishes, to help the diocese more. I can, one anecdotal thing that I would share, we in the Diocese of Cleveland in 2018, we offered to pay one time only for any parish, the diocese would pay for a parish to do an increased offertory program, which was, I thought, very generous of our diocese and our CFO. We ran that over a 4-year period. Good news is 89 of our parishes participated. The bad news is we have 186 parishes. So not all of, even with that check being offered to a parish, only 86 of them took advantage of that. So there's something underneath this, I think, that we need to look at as a whole and certainly in your own individual diocese, because there's no question that our parishes need the help. There's no question that it benefits our diocese greatly by us being engaged in the offertory support that we can provide to diocese or provide to parishes. I'm going to turn it over to Jim to talk about the annual appeal.
So we'll go to the next slide, start to an annual appeal next. So from 1919 to 21, the goals declined slightly, while the total pledge amounts increased from $278 to $300 million. So there was a trend that way. But here's the challenge we're facing, the bottom line, is we went from $712,000 donors in 2019 to $600,021. Significant drop. Now the average gift increased from $390 to $455. But at some point, this isn't sustainable. We can't keep on going down. And again, it's not just us, it's nonprofits across the country, but we gotta find some way to work together and find who's doing some good work to get that to grow and not have a decline. So we gotta work together as dioceses to try to address that as a team, because we don't want to stay where we are. That's not gonna be helpful for us. Next slide if we could. So group three saw the least donor attrition with a drop of 42%. The donors were declining, though. There's a consistent decline in number of donors with significant decreases in groups 4 and 5, who both saw 30 to 50% reductions in donor numbers. There was a strong growth in average size. Again, group 3 saw an 81% increase, with average gifts going from 176 to 319. And then total pledges showed some mixed results. Group 4 had an increase in total pledges, while groups 3 and 5 saw some decreases in both pledges and goals. And then groups 1 and 2 showed moderate donor attrition, with group 1 had a 19% decline, but a 444% increase in average gift size. So there's higher engagement from fewer folks, but we got to work together and come up with ideas. This isn't going to work long term. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think with us talking to each other, coming up with ideas, trying new things, it behooves us to work together, I think, to make that work as best we can. Next slide. The dollars up, dollars down trend seen across all sectors in recent years was reflected in Catholic philanthropy too. You see it here. The overall participation decreased by about 49%. The average gift increased by 83% from 19 to 21. So again, as I said, again, we got to find some way to address that. I don't have the answers yet, but we've got to work as a whole group of folks to do that. Now in 17, we'll look at the top 5 annual performers per group. So group 1, Mobile, had 4.8 million in total pledges, highest average gift of 676. Then you see that Pensacola, Tallahassee, that's one diocese, and Bismarck, were also top performers in group 1. In group 2, Sioux Falls is the strongest performer with 5.28 million in pledges, average gift of 417. Des Moines and Oklahoma City, again, showed solid results there. Group 3, Kansas City, again, 6.99, average gift of 505, and then Charlotte and Lansing followed closely behind, gifts around $500. And then group 4, Arlington, again, 21.7 million, high average gift of 610. So a lot of us in our work talk to Arlington, who's in our region of 4 and 14, because they're doing some great work and have for years. St. Louis, Orlando have great results as well, with substantial pledges and steady average gift sizes. Then in the group 5, Detroit, they're still doing the work that Michael did back in when he left in 2007. They're following his lead. So they're 19.6. And then Cleveland and Miami follow up closely behind that and have some real strong growth. And then the next one we looked at, again, is in the top 20 annual appeal gifts as we're looking at overall. So, again, Arlington was 21.7 in gifts, followed by Detroit and Orlando. Group 4 dominates here. Many of the top performers are Group 4. Arlington, St. Louis, and Venice among those. Group 5, again, Detroit, Cleveland, and Miami had strong showings, each going more than $13 million in total gifts. The diverse regions, again, high performers went across all regions. So it had, you know, the Midwest had St. Louis and Cleveland. The South had Miami and Orlando. The West had Seattle and Phoenix. And then the smaller dioceses shined. Notable were Kansas City and Charlotte in that group, showing strong fundraising despite having a pretty small number of households. So what we want you to do, again, is talk to some of these dioceses or have some of the high performing in the annual appeals. We'll get to plan giving. We'll get to the foundations, Heritage Society and such. Start calling some of these folks. If you leave this conference and don't connect with other colleagues, you're not doing what you need to be doing. I'm just telling you. So we want to make sure we connect on a regular basis with each other. We try to kind of pick brains and that kind of stuff if we could. Make sense? Then on page 19, this is a trend that I think is happening more and more, where more and more dioceses are doing multiple appeals. So most of them were either doing Catholic schools, priest retirement, seminary education, Catholic charities, and then religious retirement as well. So we're looking for folks that are doing different things than that. So some of the highest performing in the dioceses are in this sort of Mobile, Cleveland, Charlotte, and Arlington are all doing multiple kind of annual appeals in multiple areas. So talk to some of the folks who are doing that and look at that. Can we hold questions till the end? We'll do better that way. If y'all can just write down your questions so you don't forget it, and we'll come back at the end. But anyhow, so again, and you're going to have all this information sent to you in the next few weeks. So if you have questions about it, Patrick and I are pretty clear what's in here because we worked on it with CCS folks. You guys will be available to help answer questions too. So you may have questions to go through this stuff. We'll help you with that. And then on page 20, again, these are the Archdiocese report having performed those additional appeals. So the common thread is they're doing unique kind of needs, whether it be priest retirement, Catholic charities, schools, seminarian. And we're finding that donors will give to the diocese an appeal and these other ones as well. To give an example, we have $6.7 million in our annual appeal in that neighborhood now with the most recent one. We have over $12.5 million from all those appeals. So those other four appeals doubled our giving from $6.7 to over $12 million by adding the other four appeals. They aren't not given to the diocesan appeal. They're given to these things they really like. And some give to all of them. So again, I think if you do annual appeals, you'll bring a lot more. We would not grow our annual appeal to $12 million by itself. I promise you that. But doing the other appeals, I think, makes a big difference. So it's a trend that you want to look at doing because it helps bring more people to the table. And then last thing I want to say in my section here is, again, these are the top performers, by additional appeal type. So you see in here who did work in the schools, priest retirement, seminarian, Catholic charities. So again, charities is a significant generator of Catholic support. Arlington got $7.2 million in addition to the $21 million they got from their annual appeal. That was more than any other diocese did, at least to fill the survey out. And then Catholic education's pretty key, with things that are going on like in Wichita and Charlotte. So again, if you're looking to do annual appeals and do multiple ones, talk to some of these dioceses to see what they're doing to try to expand the engagement. What this does, it helps take care of some of the declining gifts in the diocesan appeals to get additional appeals people can give to hopefully counterbalance that. So think about that as well. And I think it goes to, I think, Sarah, you're next.
Thank you. So intentionally, campaigns build upon those building blocks of offertory and appeal performance. Just out of curiosity for this group, show of hands, how many of y'all are in some measure of campaign planning mode at the moment? Diocesan planning. All right, great. Who here is in active campaign mode, starting to raise money? Yeah. And then who here is in fulfillment mode? All right. So you track pretty well with what respondents' data looks like to this survey. So we would highlight Since 1995, 60 dioceses and archdioceses have engaged in campaigns. And this is notable because I think folks might recall, you know, 10, 20 years ago, a campaign at a diocesan level happened every 20 to 30 years. Now they're happening at a higher frequency. We're seeing on average 7 to 10 years in between campaigns for a diocese or archdiocese. So as we think about progression here, just something to note, and on that theme of reaching out to peers for advice and perspective, there are lots of folks who are in similar headspaces as where you might be when it relates to your planning. But for respondents to this survey, we said more than half are in some measure of campaign planning, 13 were in active fundraising mode, and 26 were discerning, knowing that it was coming on the horizon. We would note within this sample size, there's only one diocese that has never engaged in a campaign. So on that theme of reaching out to peers, our friends in Owensboro, if there's anyone in the room, they're not good to call on campaign advice because they've never done one. If we're inclined to help each other out when they do eventually get toward a campaign, good learning to be had from this particular group. We wanted to then be thoughtful about not just running campaigns, but the bigger picture of why do we do these in the first place? And it always has to come down to what are the priorities for which we are putting funding behind. And so you can see across responses here, there were a couple of key themes. Investing in our priests, whether that is seminary support, furthering education, or broader vocations. We would also call out pastoral centers, which was interesting, just having that foundation, that physical place where ministries can then be in service to parishes, as Patrick was speaking about when it comes to offertory and just our role for what it means in our faith communities. And then we would also call out Catholic education, both within Catholic school tuition assistance, capital projects, and there's tentacles into youth and faith formation as well. So when we think about common larger funding priorities, there's a representative set. We also then wanted to be attentive to just how overarching grouping results are looking around campaign goals and average gift performance. Forgive me for speaking in football terminology, but there are a couple of dioceses here that outkicked their coverage, so to speak, when it comes to average gift performance in the context of a campaign. We would specifically note the Diocese of Orlando in Florida, boasting an average gift of just shy of $19,000. Wichita, which not surprising, stewardship diocese. Mobile, clocking in at $4,700. Dallas, coming in at just under $4,200. And Green Bay, coming in at just under $3,500. So.
Is that a typo on the average gift for three?
Yes.
Six-fold difference.
Yes. Thank you for that catch. We then wanted to take a moment on overall campaign performance, again in service to spending some time with peers on when you've had extraordinary success, what might we look for as common causes. Across these campaigns, we would highlight a couple of specifics. One, there's a really strong case for support, and where possible, that is rooted in a pastoral plan or a larger vision for the diocese. So if you are engaging in a synod, if you have a pastoral letter that is in place or is forthcoming, those are good things when we think about ultimate campaign success. And then we would also note that the rigor around goal setting continues to be getting better. We want to find that lovely, delicate dance of putting forward a goal that is challenging and something that we know we can be successful in. So continuing to see some thoughtfulness around how we find that right balance. With that, Patrick, I'll turn it over to you to talk about foundations.
Great. So I think all of you are aware, I know a number of you have been with us over the weekend for the Foundation Forum. Foundations, I think if there's one takeaway, they are becoming an increasing presence in the landscape of diocesan philanthropy across the country. And there's a couple of slides into this. We'll get into that in more detail. But first and foremost, 52 of the dioceses that responded to the survey indicated that they have a foundation. And with them, 42 of them are separately incorporated with their own board and staff. One, the Diocese of Bismarck, is incorporated as a trust, while 18 operate under the direction of the diocese, or diocesan development office, I should say. Collectively, these 52 diocese archdioceses manage about $3.8 billion in assets and oversee over 6,500-plus endowments. The largest foundation that reported was the Catholic Community Foundation in the Archdiocese of Miami, with over $305 million. and the Catholic Foundation in Dallas with $260 million. There are other large dioceses, I'm sure, that have or larger dioceses that might have more significant foundations in terms of assets, but again, this is just a sample subset that responded to the survey. Next slide. About two-thirds of the foundations are separately incorporated, which is interesting. 68% of diocesan foundations would fall into this category, each with its own board and staff, certainly indicating a strong preference for independent governance. That's a trend that's happening certainly throughout the country with these new diocesan foundations. Other structures of foundation indicate they're operating under the Office of Advancement or Development. I think that's the case in Charlotte, Jim, if I'm not mistaken, and there's probably many others, perhaps a few in this room that fall into that as well. There is certainly a diverse approach to how diocesan foundations are formed and how they operate. 18% of the foundations fall under the category of other, reflecting a variety of structures used. I think the key insight here is that the direction is the majority of foundations are choosing a separate incorporation governance structure. It highlights the trend towards more autonomous and specialized management of diocesan resources. I think that's the big takeaway there. The next slide really talks about the explosion of foundations onto the diocesan landscape over the last 80 years, which I know that sounds like a long period, but in the life of the church, that's not that long, right? And particularly if you look at this over the last 30 years, certainly going back to the 1990s and into the 2000s, that's when most of these foundations have been formed. So this is really a new phenomenon in the life of diocesan philanthropy and something that many of us in this room and beyond are taking particular interest in how we grow and how we work within our respective foundations. So just share that with you as well. Next slide just talks about the largest foundations. This list indicates under assets under management. I mentioned the Diocese of Miami. A couple of other dioceses. It's interesting, CCS made this comment to me interestingly, San Antonio and Phoenix, which are noted in the national landscape not to be necessarily hugely philanthropic communities, yet they're doing very well with their local respective diocesan foundations, so that's interesting as well. The last comment I would make about foundations, and for those of you that were part of the foundation forum, it's often referred to, if you've seen one diocesan foundation, as many of you are shaking your heads, you've seen one diocesan foundation. And that is a cliche that is used over and over, and the longer I've been in this ministry and work, I've come to realize that firsthand. It is very, process of surveying very challenging because it's very difficult. We're trying to use this as a benchmarking study, but it's difficult because there's so much variation in how dioceses orchestrate, structure, and use their foundation. It has other implications in other areas of the survey as well, but particular in the diocesan landscape, that's something to take note of. So I'm going to turn it back to Sarah.
Thanks, Patrick. Picking up that thread of some data consistencies, we wanted to take a moment to lean into the impact of major giving, gift planning, and how digital fundraising is contributing to potential areas for growth in, year out fundraising. And the idea of major gifts is one of those places where any diocese, you can walk in and say, what level is a major gift? And you're going to get a lot of different answers as to what that is. So for the sake of this report, we wanted to zero in on the impact of gifts of $1,000 or more. And so you can see representative across the groups. When it comes to annual appeals, this is the breakout of the size of gifts that are coming through and where the majority of revenue is coming from. Probably unsurprising to this group, the lion's share does continue to come from donors of $1,000 to just shy of $5,000. But it's interesting when you look at groups 1, 3, and 5, that navy piece of the pie is getting a little smaller, and that teal and that gold is getting a little bigger, which means there are larger gifts that are coming forward. So as we're thinking about how we give ourselves the courage to, on an annual basis, invite some of those larger or major gifts, some food for thought here as we think about that group allotment. We also then wanted to be attentive to planned gifts. And there was a point in time when you were coming up in philanthropy where it was taught that a planned gift was sort of the pinnacle and the end journey of a donor-giving relationship. And we've really understood now from data, in fact, a planned gift is really much sooner in that giving experience, and that when someone does have a documented planned gift intention, actually their annual giving goes up and their campaign giving increases. So we want to be attentive to how many folks we have with those sort of receivables that are out there. And codifying these commitments is really important, because I'd imagine, just a brief show of hands, how many of you have been in receipt of an unanticipated planned gift materializing? Yeah, they're beautiful things, and they can kind of create some messes, depending on the scale and the intent, the degree of the intention around how that gift was framed out. So as you think about folks who've really made strides in codifying gift planning, we call up groups 3 and 5 in particular, have shown some real strength in those areas. And within specific dioceses, happy to offer more details there. We did want to take a moment to just shine some light on a partnership that we had with the Archdiocese of Kansas City, and in particular the Catholic Foundation of Northeast Kansas. There was a view that there was a lot of untapped codified gift planning potential that was out in the diocese, right? Like many of us, we suspect there's more there, but how you go about quantifying that, an entirely different animal. We were able to partner with the foundation to conduct a series of interviews, do some data analysis, and inside of this partnership, we're able to codify $43 million in already existing planned gift intentions. So this wasn't asking anybody to make any type of new commitment or think about anything above and beyond what was already in place, but rather to formalize and communicate what was already there. And that 43 is a baseline. There's potential that that could grow to upwards of 92, depending on percentages of estates and how that might shake out over time. That's one piece of the puzzle, right? The individual information. We have the benefit in dioceses of archdioceses of having a lot of records at our disposal, and we don't necessarily have the brute force of a large team to go out and have individual conversations with all of those folks. So how do we identify that gift planning potential? We engaged in a series of modeling and data analysis to uncover and crystallize 440 additional households. Which when you think of sort of a funnel, that's a much more manageable set of folks to engage in targeted legacy society conversations. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the impact and importance of legacy societies here. But a key to all of this is you have to have good data to work with in the first place to think about how major and planned gifts might come forward. And so we had some curiosities in this survey about what are the platforms folks are using most regularly, both on their CRMs and within digital giving platforms. And so you can see from these two pie charts, Blackbaud is by far and away the most consistently used platform in both of these areas. But we'd be remiss not to note Gabrielsoft as another set of CRMs that are making their way out. If you're thinking about changing the platform or environment you're in, this is a good place to start to understand who's using some of these different environments to really get the clear upshot from colleagues and partners on what are they seeing, what are they not seeing in these different systems. We then also think there's tremendous opportunity to continue to grow the array of digital giving opportunities and embracing technology. When we think of the increases in offertory and annual appeal success, digital giving continues to be an important component of what is offered forward, particularly as we think about recurring gifts. Which leads us to the next slide, which is around the types of gifts that we welcome or inviting within our dioceses or archdioceses. Important to note, out of all respondents, almost everyone has a concentrated focus on online giving, and more are focusing on recurring giving. If we were to look back at those campaign stats of sort of from 2018 to 2024, you would note the number of gifts inside of a campaign has gone up precipitously. And we think that's really important because it has tentacles back to recurring giving and being unapologetic about offering multiple opportunities for folks to give again if they're so moved. There are other than pieces here that all of these forums and platforms and ways to give do require a measure of education, right? I don't know about y'all. I didn't own an iPhone until the mid-20-teens. If you think about folks in your communities and there's QR codes, they don't know how to use those. Having that paper alternative is always going to be a piece of the puzzle. But each of these has a degree of education that has to be provided to the donor for them to make use of that type of giving vehicle. And we'll talk more about how that has implications into staffing in a little bit. We did then want to take a brief moment to note the importance of legacy societies and how that correlates to the unrealized plan giving potential. The headline here is if you don't have one of these, it's really worth considering standing one of them up in service to quantifying what that plan giving potential might look like. And then if you're curious of who might, you might pick up that phone and call when it comes to setting up a legacy giving society and the parameters of who is included inside of that society, this is a really helpful starting place, according to just the sheer number of members. And all of this, of course, has to be supported by humans to carry the good work forward. So I'll turn it over to Patrick to talk about the humans.
So, I guess that's a good way to start it. Yeah, that's good, Sarah. The human part of it. This does tie back to, I think, the initial conversation about, offertory giving, and our diocesan level, our parish level, annual appeals. It all kind of, there's a thread here because the return on investment is one thing that we need to provide that then we can go back to our respective CFOs, our respective bishops, and other chancery staff personnel to provide some insight and certainly information that would help us better resource our respective offices, departments, et cetera, et cetera. So we'll dive into a little bit in some of these slides here that are coming up that I think provide a little bit of a glimpse into the real extraordinary opportunity that exists in all of our dioceses, hopefully to increase the number of resources, particularly those staffing resources, to help us deliver the message to the faithful, notably, certainly in the plan giving and major gift front, but beyond as well. So you'll see here on this slide that the diocese, the reported larger diocese, I think is the takeaway here, tend to have more staff resources. This isn't a huge surprise. They have more exempt and they have more non-exempt staff. And that's probably a big takeaway, as you can see from this slide. The one takeaway that we probably know in this room is compared to other sectors, we are way behind. So, and you're all looking at me and shaking your head. Of course, I don't need a study from anybody to tell us that. But if you talk to our certainly colleagues in the healthcare industry, universities, the list goes on and on, they are significantly more resourced than we are. And that limits certainly your collective ability to share the story with the faithful in our respective communities. That's a huge challenge, and this data certainly shows that. I mean, there's some data details that I won't get into all of it with you right now, but it's safe to say that's probably one of our biggest challenges. If you look at the next slide, this kind of just gets into some of the detail, just so you can see what other dioceses might be doing. So on this, you'll see that development advancement directors handle the majority of planned and major giving efforts, representing about 50% of personnel responsible across those responding dioceses. Foundation and staff are the second most common group, accounting for 25%, obviously reflecting their significant role in fundraising efforts. Full-time plan giving officers represent 12%, and obviously in the context of what we just discussed, that's an important conversation. Full-time major gift officers, that's a huge question for all of us, how to build MGO staffing in our respective dioceses, account for 11%. And a lot of parishes, or rather a lot of dioceses, have a blended model where they have an MGO do plan giving and major gift work. I know that's the case in Cleveland as well, but it just, you know, depends on each diocese and where you're at structurally. Next group. This just gets into the specifics by diocese, by sector, or I should say by grouping, and you can look to see where you might fit there or look to another diocese that might most resemble you and how that diocese is staffed their resources and what kind of resources they're dedicating to major gift, plan gift, et cetera work. So I just wanted to comment on that. The last slide we wanted to talk about, just something we discussed with CCS, is new innovations in the face of challenges. We just talked about staffing. That's probably one of the biggest challenges that we're facing. Restricted or certainly smaller representation in terms of actives practicing the faith, mass attendance, those declining mass participation, those kind of issues are certainly paramount. They have a lot of impact on everything we're talking about. Sarah talked a lot about using technology, leveraging technology. Those are all issues. But ultimately, that corner box there about seeking engagement. That's the stewardship component. How are we engaging the faithful in the life of our parish, first and foremost, but then more broadly speaking, in the life of the diocese? We have to do a better job doing that in a much more consistent, proactive manner than certainly than we are right now. I think all would agree in that context. Again, I won't reiterate some of the other things, but that about using technology and certainly the culture. These are all things that are part of our, I think, landscape that all of us are facing challenges looking forward. So I'm going to turn it back to Sarah and Jim.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up pretty quick. We're about a minute behind where we wanted to be, which is pretty good. We're pretty much on target with the 15 minutes. Let me just kind of say real quick, I'll stay in this slide, then we'll thank people, Sarah, then we'll put questions. So obviously, engage your major donors. That's a big deal, particularly with the number of donors going down. Renew your case for support. Leverage your leadership. You got to get involved in the gift planning game. You just have to. There's tons of money in that. $70 trillion is going to transfer hands from parents to kids. And then talk to each other about what we all did or are doing to deal with some of the strategies. Some people are doing some great work. Start picking brains. That's key. Let's go to the last slide with the number of dioceses that filled it out if we could. So just want to thank those that are on this list. When this goes out to every bishop in the country, your bishop will see that you filled this out and he'll be grateful. So, and then if you haven't filled it out, please, next time we do it. I know you're all busy. I get busy. We're all busy. Please take time next year. We'd like to have 150 filled out next time, not just 75. We'll open up. We're about a minute or two off. We'll open up for questions and answers for the last 13 minutes.
Why don't the three of you go to the microphone up there so you can answer questions? Start right here.
Name and where you're from.
Thank you. Debbie DiCarlo, Diocese of Phoenix. On the charity and development appeals, the first set of slides that you got into, did that pull out the diocese that assessed or penalized those who didn't meet their goal?
No, I don't think we pulled that out. We can look at it. We'll go ahead. So why don't we go ahead and add that to what we're doing. In the past, about two-thirds of the diocese assessed the goal and about one-third didn't. We'll see if that's changed from 2018. But we can add that to what we're doing.
The other thing I think that's paramount, or not that's helpful to know, some dioceses, some states, the catedraticum and the appeal are combined. So when they report, I think that's the case in a lot of the Florida dioceses, if I'm not mistaken. So their appeal dollars are inclusive of both the catedraticum and the appeal. So that there is some nuance. That makes the benchmarking more challenging as well in this process. But
and then one other thing. This isn't a question. This is a plea. Thank you for the recommendations. I think it's going to be really helpful. But if this is going to be shared with bishops and CFOs, if you could lead with what you're determining as a very critically understaffed, I think that would help us all because otherwise, the reality is we can talk about this all we want, but if we can't grow to meet our competitors.
Do me a favor, come up and see us, make sure you write those down. But I think what we have to do too, though, I think we have to talk about those who've gotten a number of staff and how they did that. So I think we have to, again, we had that at the foundation when Bill talked about how he went from no plan giving staff to three. So I think it's critical we talk to the folks in that list who have a number of staff and how they went about getting that done. So we'll do both and, but come up and make sure we get both those ideas to add to what we're doing.
Thank you. I just wanted to say thank you. Oh, Kimberly from Diocese of Central Florida. And I just want to say thank you all for the benchmarking. As you said, for our bishops and even for our board of directors, for those of us who are foundations, this is critical information they're always looking for. This will help us go back and advocate for some of the things that we need. So I really appreciate that. But I wanted to comment on a couple of things that you said, segueing on what Patrick said about the offertory program. So we're blessed in our Diocese of Orlando for the chancery creating a service agreement for our foundation to provide those offertory programs. And the parishes that we work with, as Patrick said, not all of them will respond, but the parishes that we work with increase annual offertory average about 15%. Some have 43, some have lower. It depends on how the pastor and parish will implement. But all boats rise with that. So we do not have the cathedraticum. All of our annual appeal is just charitable giving. And that is determined by Office of Finance with a calculation, some sort of algorithm based on their income. So if parish income is increasing, then so is the annual appeal for the chancery. And so all boats are rising when you have that model out there. And like you said, Patrick, that's a huge blessing. The other thing you talked about, Jim, was the retention of donors. So just sharing a best practice for us, about 4 years ago, we started a segmented mailing targeting just non-donors, and we have reversed that attrition trend so that we're retaining, we're actually acquiring new non-donors and then doing a better job of retaining them. So
that's great. Thanks, Kimberly. Appreciate that. There was a question up here, I think, Michael.
In the middle.
Right here. Need the microphone.
Hi, Catherine Fraser, Archdiocese of Los Angeles. I'm just curious, and maybe this is something to add to the questions next year, if you have a sense of how many dioceses and archdioceses do in-person solicitation for the annual appeal versus just like a direct
or just in general in person. So again, we're going to forget that come up and we'll jot down, so don't leave without getting
this. Just out of curiosity, raise your hands. How many of you do in-person solicitation for your appeal, just so she has a general sense in the room? We do in Cleveland. We have relationship managers that get assigned to donors.
We do it for other giving, but not for that. Question.
Tim Dockery, Diocese of Charleston. Question for Sarah. Yes. First, just, hi Sarah, good to see you again.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, the average gap between capital campaigns is about 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Is that, from the end of the active phase of the prior campaign or the end of the fulfillment period for the campaign?
Yeah. So typically from the end of the active phase. So that's where that pledge period is really important. And of course, looking at how you're doing with fulfillment is one of the series of factors that we would look at to say, are we ready? And is this the right time to come back around again? But sort of end to end for what the lay public would know about a campaign, 7 to 10 years is more commonly that time frame.
Hi, Kim Roach, Diocese of Harrisburg. I'm curious about your multiple solicitations and how you manage donor fatigue in that.
Yeah, I don't buy donor fatigue. So I'm just telling
you. How do you feel about that?
Here's what we're trying to get people to do in stewardship. We're trying them to decide a percent of income they're going to give. My wife and I give 10%. We can't get fatigue. We give 10%. The question, where it's going to go? So if people start giving because they're grateful, because they're blessed, and they decide a percentage they're going to give, you can't have fatigue. So now we use capital campaigns that go from like 9% to 10%. So you could grow your percentage by that. My wife and I have already given the 10 capital campaigns in 4 years of marriage. Every 4 years we're doing a capital campaign for something. So we're used to that. But I think I say it, I don't buy it, because if we teach people that they're blessed and they give in gratitude and they give a percentage, I'm not going to give 12, I'm giving 10. So how can I be fatigued if I get the real stewardship message? That's pretty core, I think.
Anybody else? Question?
Lucy from Diocese of Shreveport. When you find that people do second appeals for different specific ministries, are they adding that total to the overall appeal? Did you find, is there a percentage that do either?
So, first off, we only had 3 people last year say you're asking too many times for our financial gifts. We had 3 calls out of 68,000 households. So they aren't calling. Now, maybe they're upset, but they're not telling us that. So I think what you want people – my goal is every single donor gives all 5 appeals and a capital campaign at the parish and offertory does an estate gift. That's my agenda. I want them to give all 5 – God bless everything else they give to. I want 5 annual appeals for the Austin work. I want to give them to the offertory, a capital campaign, and plain gift. And so I think we find they like it, and some may give the charities and priest retirement, not the seminarians. We let them pick and choose. I think that's key.
I do think, though, there is a challenge. We face this challenge, so we do multiple appeals. But it is challenging to coordinate it all. I mean, you've got emails going out, letters going out. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. This is not for the faint of heart in that context. So I do think it's a challenge for us. I know we have it in our own diocese in terms of managing them, and so they're not hidden into each other. We have the main appeal, and we work constantly. The sun never sets on the appeal, as we say. But then how do you integrate these other messages and opportunities for giving? It's a challenge. I think, you know, I know in our, what we do in our department is we meet once a month. We call it flight school, just to make sure that the planes are all heading in the right direction. And it still gets screwed up, I'll be honest. But we try to meet monthly, and that looks at all of those communications that are going out, all the solicitation, direct mail, email, and, you know, just, because otherwise it does become, there's no question you're going to hit yourself going one way or the other.
No, I think it's a big deal. We meet every Monday at 10 to do that exact same thing, but we make sure our letters and emails and communications are more for information and thank yous than there are solicitations. So we do solicitations. We have more things going out to thank and inform than we do to ask. That's important.
And we double down on that informing and thanking, where we can, as simply as possibly, in as few words as possible, convey to donors what their gift is doing in each of these areas that makes it different from the others. That helps us too.
Okay. Other questions? You mean it was such a triumph of pedagogy up here, there could be no more questions? Final thoughts.
What we want to do is go home from here and call other colleagues. So we want to connect with folks to get encouraged, to get ideas, to get support. So do not go back and solo it. That does not work effectively. You'll find you call colleagues, they'll call you back. You may have to text them a couple of times again to get back with you, but be persistent. But I think we want to be a resource to each other when we go back so we can get better at what we're doing. I think that's important. Final thoughts.
Jim, you said it all. I'll echo just our gratitude to CCS for partnering with us. Yep. That is important. So thank you to CCS for doing that.
No, it wouldn't happen.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for your work.
Thank you all. One more session to go and you get back. Thank you, guys.